Get ready for the O'Chelly Effect.
So it's the third day of July 2017, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar, and this indeed is the O'Chelly Effect, broadcast live from the facilities of O'Chelly.com, but also heard on various other networks, including AutonomousMedia.net. I do believe we get played on FreemanJack.com. We also get played in places like These Changing Times, etc., replayed on UCY.TV when they can. Geez, Maggie Shack, all you guys do appreciate you no matter how you're encountering the show via your Fondle Slab of choice, your applicable application, etc., etc. Welcome. So, what are we doing tonight? This is going to be a little more fun than usual, and I've got to wait just a little bit before I bring my guest on because he's going to be coming on with us via cell phone. Okay, now. Why is he coming on via cell phone? Because he's traveling at the moment. He's traveling to his next gig, Dan Richards. Okay. In case you missed the articles, and also right ahead of Vice News, you know, because Vice News does segments on various interesting characters in America, that's for sure. Right ahead of Vice News, we'll air it on Wednesday. And right after his featured article in Sports Illustrated and a couple other different places, we got Dan Richards, the progressive liberal. This guy literally is an independent wrestler. Now, I don't mean Greco-Roman wrestling. I do mean, yeah, like WWE style, except without WWE money. Okay, there are some independent wrestling federations, although most of them were put out of business by the McMahons. During the time of the 1980s, 90s, stuff like that. I think it even started in the 1970s. Now, this guy is of interest for a lot of different reasons. Not only because he is just out there taunting the Trumpanzees, as it were, because he wrestles mainly in the Appalachian area. He does wrestle in Kentucky. He wrestles in, oh, the Virginias, places like that. And in fact, I think he's on his way to a place in Tennessee at the moment. This is the area in which this independent guy does his thing. Now, what's fascinating is the crowds absolutely hate him because he is out there, you know, saying stuff like, I want to take your guns away and build a wall around your town so that you hillbillies can't possibly infect the rest of the population with your breeding patterns. Stuff like that he taunts the crowds with. And I read an article recently where he said he's actually going to go to a Dukes of Hazzard festival to make sure that he aggravates the rednecks. So I thought it was an absolutely logical choice to see if I could get him as a guest. Now, I do want to talk to Dan Richards. That's not his real name. It is a stage name. Yeah, here we go, breaking the fourth wall right away. It is a stage name. A lot of people don't carry their real name. You know, Hulk Hogan was not born Hulk Hogan, right? Bam Bam Bigelow was not born Bam Bam Bigelow. Oh, no, Chuck is talking wrestling. Okay. So Bam Bam was actually, his name was Scott Bigelow, and the reason why I know this oh so well, and in case you don't know who I'm talking about, this was the big man that you used to see with some sort of beard happening and flames tattooed on his bald head. The reason why I know so much about him is because he's from exactly the same hometown that I'm from, and I used to get drunk with this guy, or at least I got drunk around him. I don't think I ever saw Bam Bam drunk. I used to drink with him in a little hole in the wall bar right next to a place called the Stone Pony in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And often his wrestling persona was said to hail from Asbury Park, New Jersey. But quite honestly, his family and himself, they lived in a place called Neptune, New Jersey, which was an adjacent town in the Jersey Shore area. Anyway, so we used to drink in this place, which was a hole in the wall right next to the Stone Pony called J.V. Higginbottom's. This was a biker bar, and you might be surprised that I used to fit in quite well in biker bars. Yeah, I know, I'm tattooed. My hair is still long, even though I'm in my 40s. It has been cut short a few times, but it is back to its longer, less than inglorious past, I guess. Anyway, you know, tattooed, wearing the boots, all that kind of stuff. I used to hang around with a lot of different outlaw biker guys. And so did Bam Bam. In fact, he hung out with a bunch of guys who usually would cause a fight wherever they went, called the Breed. Anyway, I am digressing a lot here, am I not? But we used to drink in this one very small hole-in-the-wall bar called J.B. Higginbottom's. And it was very cool, man. Bam Bam, you know, continued to live. He's passed away now, by the way. He had a lot of health issues, a big guy, very big guy, and people knew him. I think he was something like 6'5", I don't know, near 400 pounds, something like that, and very, very large guy, the kind of guy who could take his hand and clasp my head as if he were palming a basketball rather easily. And that had happened on occasion. Never had the occasion to fight with Bam Bam because I really wasn't suicidal. However, I can tell you this, he had two brothers, and he was the small one. Anyway, cool guy, and of course, living in the Asbury Park Neptune area, you dealt with a place called Convention Hall, which had everything from the touring concerts that would come through to, guess what, yes, the wrestling events and all of that stuff, including choirs. I mean, everybody from Black Sabbath to Jimmy Superfly Snuka had been in this joint, which was a kind of a small place right there on the boardwalk in Asbury Park. And so being a local to that area, being a person in entertainment in that area, of course, I ran into these guys from time to time. Lots of famous musicians that I had encountered. Lots of interesting things that have gone on, but I'm not here to tell my story today. No, we're going to get into Mr. Richard's story in just a minute. I'm actually going to try and call him in about 5 more minutes, so a few more minutes of me rambling. Thing is, I find this extremely relevant, especially considering the latest Twitter fit thrown by the alleged commander-in-chief. You know, now he's pasting CNN logos on the head of Vince McMahon and, oh, I don't know, arm bar. What do they call that? Oh, clotheslining him on the ground like he did at one WrestleMania so many years ago. I think it was at Trump Plaza. I don't know. Anyway, these people definitely had a bit of influence on his way of doing business. And, of course, I contend, quite honestly, that one of the most intelligent things ever uttered in public was uttered by Jesse Ventura, who I disagree with quite a bit, but cannot disagree with him about this, that politics is very much like professional wrestling. And I take his comment just a little further as I paraphrase it. Here's the deal. They all work for the same company. Do I need to say it slower? I don't think so. They all work for the same company. They all serve the same masters. No matter how much they appear to be in opposition to one another about petty squabbles, made up things, in fact, completely manufactured, scripted nonsense, oh my, it does sound a lot like American politics. And in fact, politics worldwide. Most of the people that are allegedly in contention with one another over various issues are really not. They get together afterwards, drink beer together, their girlfriends hang out together, and, you know, in the old days, they used to juice up with these same steroids and find themselves the very same drug dealers. We could get into the whole darker end of the spectrum, but here's the funny part to me. We know that this is entertainment. We know that all of that is obviously made up, well, except there is this small segment of the population that'll tell you. And I'm going to mock people right now when I say wrestling is real. Anyway, there's a lot of people that say that. it's not just a few people, and it's not just those that just graduated from riding on the short bus here in America. No, 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 not at all. It is actually a fairly significant segment of the population who believe that the stage show, which is given to them, that the battle royales, as they may be conducted right before their eyes, are realistic Mortal Kombat. And it's not. But anyway, I do remind you again that I'm likening this to the political theater. Because at the end of the night, they divide up the money. Yes, the stars get paid a little more and they get put into a better position. Maybe they get better travel plans. Maybe they get a lot more press. But there is a whole lot of other guys that still work for the company who are just there to be the opponents to be beaten on. There were the perpetual losers that seemed to be good guys and all that. And that was their whole job, was just to be the other body that was being tossed around and looking like they might have a chance to upset one of the established figures every now and then, you know, like a stalking horse and politics, right? And then there were other guys who were out there meant to be the bad guy, meant to be the heel, conducting themselves as if they were the great enemy of everyone else, conducting themselves as if the press hated them, conducting themselves with all sorts of face paint and making sure that they presented themselves, whether they have a persona as, oh, I don't know, there used to be this guy called the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, was not a millionaire, but claim to be. And, you know, individuals like that who would walk around and say, I'm a wrestler, but I'm also a millionaire and I can buy and sell you. And wait a minute. Maybe that's what happened here. Combination of face paint. I've actually got a lot more money than I do. Little fake hair. Fools buying into the persona. Oh, no. That might be the president now. Well, at least Stephanie McMahon, the wife of Vince McMahon, is there to run the Small Business Administration because she would know a lot about small business and theater. So there it is. Anyway, I do find it fascinating that this guy has the guts to go out there into what is clearly red, red, red Trump country and wave a blue flag, literally taunting people just for the sake of a persona. And I'm going to ask him about, because sometimes, the reason why I brought up those guys that think it's real, sometimes these guys actually will turn around and try and attack them, sabotage them, flatten their tires, put out their windshields, go after their girlfriends. I've seen, icicles whipped at these guys who are supposed to be bad guy wrestlers. I've seen all kinds of craziness from the true believers of wrestling. And I wonder if Dan Richards has experienced any of that sort of flack as he runs around being the progressive liberal. Well, we are going to find out. Let's see now. Now, I've never tried this before on the Ocelli.com platform, so hopefully, my friends, we will be able to do this without too much difficulty. Let's see what happens when we try and call Dan Richards, the progressive liberal, which, by the way, he's going to be involved in a match very shortly where the loser of the match winds up having to wear either a Trump or Hillary t-shirt. Great concept. Of course, when they got to wear diapers and things like that afterwards, or a dress, that used to be the old days. I guess that's not permissible anymore. But for one persona or the other, it would be more humiliating to have to wear one of those things. I personally would be pissed if I was wearing either one. But then again, I'm the kind of guy who hates both sides of the equation and tells you about it constantly. I think I have Mr. Richards with me right now. Are you there, Dan?
I'm here. How's it going?
Oh, it is going great, man. I was just talking about my personal interactions with some wrestlers in the past. You are the first wrestler, though, to appear on this show. And I want to congratulate you for a couple of things before we even discuss anything. First of all, Your timing is impeccable. You're definitely going to be able to capitalize on people that are going to hate you. You are a good heel, my friend, because no matter how much of it you believe, you definitely are inspiring real animosity, I think, among wrestling fans. And I find this entirely fascinating, especially because just in my limited conversations with you, you're a very mellow sounding guy. And of course, I'm not talking to the persona right now. I'm talking to the guy behind the persona. And I remind my listeners, because you guys understand, there is a difference. Okay. So I was also talking about, but not much, but wait, let's not spoil that. Because you cannot possibly have the stones that you have. I mean, I saw a comment that you're going to actually go to a Dukes of Hazzard convention just to see if you can irritate rednecks, which I think is hysterical, man. And I don't fall in the red or blue category. I can't stand either. I see it all as a great corporation. And I think wrestling is the perfect analogy for the American politic anymore, because effectively I see both sides working for the one company at the end of the night. But here's what's cool about you. You're an independent guy, actually, in the business of wrestling. And I love that, first of all. So, but I want to congratulate you on, first of all, having impeccable timing with this. And secondly, having guts, because sometimes people can get a little out of hand with the presentation and take it so seriously that, you know, you could be actually putting yourself in harm's way, couldn't you?
Well, I mean, I've had threats of gun violence, but, and, you know, that scares my dad in particular, who, you know, I talk to a few times a week, but I probably should be worried, but it doesn't, you know, when we had, you know, someone say that they're going to shoot me if I made the town, and have another guy at another event, you know, rub his pistol as I was saying we're going to take the guns away. You know, it's just, I can't live my life like that. I'm just not going to live by fear, in fear. So, you know, I'm going to make the town. Now, if there's bomb threat and they shut the building down, that's the only way I'm not wrestling. Or if they actually kill me.
Well, yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to wrestle if they killed you. That's for sure. but I love it. Let me dial it back a little bit, because I love getting inside of the person that does the thing. Okay.
Okay.
What is it that got you interested in wrestling in the first place? I mean, were you just a kid and you saw it on TV and you thought it was a great thing? Were you a high school wrestler, middle school wrestler? I mean, what's your pedigree like personally?
I was a basketball player. So, I mean, I always played sports, but I mean, basketball was my main thing, which always coincided with amateur wrestling, which, you know, I would have liked to have done. And, you know, I admire the guys that are shooters. I mean, there's very few shooters left, you know, true shooters. I mean, but, you know, as far as what got me into it, I mean, I rented WrestleMania 3 from whatever video store, and then just kind of, I filled myself in on, you know, the history from there, or, you know, what I knew was the history at the time. You know, I watched a lot of New York TV, you know, WWF, to those who don't know what I'm talking about, WWE today, of course. But, you know, I've continued to fill myself in the history. You know, I've watched a lot of stuff from territories, and, you know, there's so much to catch up on, so much to learn to truly understand the history of this great business.
Well, that's true. And let me just chime in here real quick to let you know how I have a little bit of knowledge on this. WrestleMania 3, if I remember correctly, that would have to be the Hulk Hogan Andre the Giant main event, right?
Yeah, and I mean, even never having watched wrestling before, those were two household names. So I knew that was big, you know, and seeing them on the cover, I knew it was a big deal. And, you know, just the name WrestleMania sounds big. And so, you know, I was drawn to that aspect of it. And then, you know, I watched it all the way through, and, you know, I saw Savage Steamboat, and, you know, you know, all the other matches that they have in the card. I couldn't recite the card to you right now, but I mean, that got me hooked, and I was watching Saturday and Sunday mornings. And
well, let's see now. Saturday morning, if you were watching in New York, because that's where I'm actually from, if you were watching there, you were watching WWOR TV. Saturday morning, they always had wrestling.
I didn't live in New York. I refer to it as New York TV. New York is what the boys refer to as back in the day when it was there were still territories around. The McMahon territory was referred to as New York, and then when WCW came around, that was referred to as Atlanta, you know. But I mean, every territory was defined by a city, typically. Back when there were, you know, all of the territories that there were,
right?
Even though they covered a lot more ground.
Yeah, there was like a Southwestern Conference at one point. There was like the NWA, I think. The WCW had come around. This is where Ric Flair came from, if I remember right.
Well, I'm going back before that even. I mean, where there was, you know, you had the Von Erich territory based in Dallas. You know, Dallas in the Sportatorium. You had Memphis, which was based in Memphis, but, you know, they had a whole loop they did every week. They had the same regular towns every week, and, you know, Friday and Saturday night were spot show nights. Portland was an infamous territory. I mean, San Francisco was a territory back in the day, but it's not like they just wrestled in San Francisco. You know, they all had a loop, and, you know, you could draw the line for where the territory was, and you encroach on another promoter's territory. Because that, you know, it was just the promoters worked together back then. This was preceding Monday Night Wars and everything, where, you know, both those companies were national, and it was truly, you know, a battle for supremacy. You know, it was a great time in the business, because everyone you would do 9 months in the territory or a year, and then you would move on. There was somewhere else to work, and so you would learn new things at each territory, and each territory operated a different way. And, you know, you worked in front of different crowds, and guys really could hone their craft. And that's not to mention all the places you could go internationally, and in Canada and Mexico, Puerto Rico, and places like that. I mean, it's just,
I was even talking about, knowing Bam Bam Bigelow, and he had gone to Japan for a little while, actually. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Japan was, Japan is still a place where, you know, Japan had its little downtime, and that's really kind of on fire again right now with the, you know, New Japan. And, you know, especially a lot of people have been drawn to Japanese wrestling now with some of the people that have come over from there, you know, become big stars here in the States.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a good time. Good time in wrestling. I didn't mean to cut you off. It's a great time in wrestling right now, but it's not like the territory days where I just described, where there were so many places for guys to work and earn a living. But I mean, there are a lot of places now, and a lot of the scenes, like in the UK, it's really heated up there after, you know, being not dead, but certainly not as it was.
Well, right, and WWE kind of, I mean, in my estimation, sort of gobbled up a lot of the other promoters' territories, and seemed to almost create an international thing there for a while. I'm not sure what the condition is now, but
exactly what happened. What happened was, you know, his dad, you know, they had their territory in the Northeast, and then he took over, and he wanted to take it national, and he did. He got took the best stars and best territories, and could offer more money, and, you know, he built it from there. I mean, now it's a global empire. It's just there's nothing like it. I mean, no one's gonna overtake them. I mean, the sooner people can understand that, I think we do at this point. I mean, the best thing a company can do if they're trying to get TV on a national level is just differentiate themselves. And I think now with Jarrett overseeing, it was Impact Wrestling until a couple of days ago, now it's Global Force Wrestling. You know, I think he understands that, and they're not trying to compete. They're just trying to be different and be a profitable company. And that's the best thing for everyone. If there's profitable companies that guys can earn a living wrestling for.
Well, right, and there's still a series of independent guys trying to do it that, you know, that come through, and there's smaller companies out there. And it seems to me as though this is where you have actually cut your teeth is with those guys. Yep. Now, I may be a little unclear about it, but I think you deserve something a little bigger, man, because you have come up with the most timely and interesting thing. You definitely tapped into like the perfect catch-all heel right now. And here's the strange thing. It's not a complete invention. I'm not saying that you're not a good actor, but it does actually come from a place. You actually are somebody who's not exactly on the Trump train, are you?
No, I mean, I've said it a few times in the last week for sure. It's like I couldn't say I wanted to replicate what I do, and but on the other end of the political spectrum. So say I was working in, you know, the Los Angeles area, and as wrestling around there and independent promotions there, and I wanted to be a Sean Hannity type character. I couldn't do it. I mean, I could study all the footage of Sean Hannity there is, but at the end of the day, it's like it would come across as disingenuous and not, it's not me, and I wouldn't believe the things I'm saying. And the reason I get the reactions I get, and I'm, you know, continuing to get now on a bigger level, is because it's not fake. I'm not being myself. So I'm just turning it up, as Chris Hayes quoted for the world to hear on MSNBC. I thought that was really cool.
Well, that's exactly what you did. Look, you increase the volume. That's one of the keys here that people need to understand with this. And I love going into this sort of discussion because, again, pro wrestling at its core was something else before the theater kind of really took hold as a big, huge aspect of it. I mean, there used to be these vague sort of personas, right? The one guy who would go in there and he would be like the wild Samoans, right? They can't speak English and they're crazy from the island. They weren't really like that. They were actually kind of normal guys if you talk to them. Some of these other guys, I can't even think of who I'd want to go to on this, but like the Moondogs, let's say. You might have heard of these wrestlers before, yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but, you know, you got to realize it was a different time then. The business was more protected. Wrestling evolves as society changes, and that's what will make, you know, continue to make it successful. And so all I am is part of that evolution and realizing what the social climate is right now. I mean, and, you know, hey, Chris Hayes' piece touched on that. There are people on me that, you know, that was preceded by, you know, back in the Cold War days, you had Nikolai Volkov, who's the heel, and, you know, you had many other Russian heels. It's just, yeah, the Iron Sheik, or, you know, in the 80s. I mean, it's just because the Iran-Contra controversy and all that. So it just measures the climate. I mean, the last time WWE tried something, unfortunately, you know, it got ixnayed by the network. They had Muhammad Hassan, you know, an Iraqi heel, and he really touched a nerve and was getting real heat. And, you know, it was drawing that, you know, I couldn't tell you how he was drawing, numbers wise, but, people took notice without a doubt. But it just, you know, at that point, they're a publicly traded company and the network and the sponsors said no. And that's, you know, one thing that what WWE has to make a focus today on, you know, putting smiles on people's faces. Whereas before, you know, wrestling's always been its best. And this, I'm not saying this knock on WWE, because I mean, I respect the WWE and I understand what they you know, have to the rules they have to abide by, so to speak, as best as I can to being an outsider. But you know, they just different. It's different. Whereas wrestling, as if they you, it's about creating emotion. And because I'm not, you know, not controlled by a corporate sponsor, we're not, you know, we're an independent company, not a publicly traded company. We can leave people angry. You know, the payoff is at the end of the day that their fans are going to be happy. You know, for one reason or another, they're going to get their payoff. You can't keep making them angry. Eventually, they'll get sick of it. It's like anything else. So you'll watch a movie. The hero's in trouble, and the good guy prevails.
Well, right, and the other aspect to remember here, though, is that no hero is ever made without a good enemy that everybody despises or fears, or both, right? So basically, you decide. And how is it that you came to this? Because okay, we talked about how you were a basketball guy. I mean, you're kind of tall. I read different stats on you; they vary a little bit. And I didn't ask you any pre-interview questions. So, you know, what dimensions are we talking about on you? Because some of the pictures, they don't make you look all that large, but you're not a small guy, are you?
I mean, I'm 6'5", 230, which, is conventionally, I guess, considered to be a bigger person. I mean, no doubt tall, but I'm, my weight is distributed, pretty evenly. So it's like, I broke my hand as well, right when I started wrestling for Appalachian Mountain Wrestling. And I'm the body type that I thin out really quick. And I could not lift weights because I had a broken hand. And, right. I'm never going to have thick legs again in all likelihood because my knees have a lot of wear and tear on it and I can't do squats. So it's like, a lot of lightweight leg extensions, but I'm filling back out, and we've got a good amount of time here. I can go into this a little more. It's like, cause I haven't in previous interviews, only in the last like couple months, and thank good better then than never. I really figured out diet and I say figured out, I had help. I finally went to my personal trainer who I see, twice a month. I'd see her more, but it's pricey. I see her twice a month, and I finally said to her, I was like, look, I get the basics of diet and nutrition, but I'm missing something because I'm not filling out like I want to or need to. So, and then I didn't look how I wanted to. And she put together a plan to me where it's like, wouldn't eat this, eat this, and this. It's like, I learned about what macros are and, where I needed to be. Carbohydrates actually aren't a bad thing, especially when you're trying to put on size. Yeah. So, I eat a lot of carbohydrates. I get a lot of protein. I'm getting like 4,000 calories a day. One thing I was missing was keeping my fats down. So, my fats were probably of all my calories, probably 30% of it more were fats. And so I got it down to like 20 or below. And so I've kind of lean out as well as, put on some size, from my hand injury and everything. So if you look at video of me or pictures of me today versus even a couple of months ago, and that's right when my hand was, to a point where I could lift again. It's a noticeable difference, but yeah, it's an upper body business, and I'm not where I want to be. So, all I can do is train hard, and it hasn't been any easier the last week with all the media attention and coverage I've gotten on mainstream and all their interviews. I'm still trying to get my meals in. I just finished a Tupperware meal before the interview started, and I had, try and get home my 4,000 calories in and keep going, keep working hard.
Well, you know, and that's the thing I want the listeners to appreciate. Maybe you didn't get to really go through this with some of the other interviews, but I'm a little odd. I want people to understand that there is a lot that goes into this. You know, it's not just your diet, your physical training, but I mean, this is a grueling thing to do. Broken fingers, you know, dislocations, problems like that. They're going to come up. You're going to take a beating in this business. Yeah. Whether, you know, I mean, because people talk about how, you know, there's nothing real about it. I'll tell you what is real is the amount of abuse you wind up putting your body through for the performance. And, you know, that's not even to mention the rest of the performance, right? That's just the mechanics in the ring. And it's not because there's any, you know, I wasn't criticizing your body type. It's just I'm trying to give people an idea here.
I recognize I'm really thin, and you know, I'm lean, you know, I'm fit, I'm not as trim as I want to be, but yeah, no, I don't take it as a criticism, and even if it is, you know, I have thick skin when it comes to stuff like that. Like, you're not going to hurt my feelings. Like, I know what I am, and I know who I am, and just, like, I know where I want to be, so I don't get too caught up in, like, other people's thoughts. I mean, there's people whose thoughts I value very much and very highly. And, you know, who I go to advice to. But outside of that, you know, I'm in competition, not with anyone else, but with myself. So, you know, I don't sweat stuff like that. I've had people make comments about some of my older videos in particular. And, you know, but look at the latest episode of Appalachian Mountain Wrestling TV. You know, they'll air tomorrow, which would be the 4th. You know, we have a new episode that comes out every Tuesday night. You know, usually it's before midnight, usually after 9 p.m. But, you know, we're look at me, you know, in this coming episode versus just a couple months. You know, you would notice a difference for sure.
Well, and when did they film the Vice News segment? Because that's going to come out on Wednesday, I think.
Wednesday, which would be the 5th at 7 p.m. is when it airs Eastern time, from what I understand. But yeah, they were with us on all day, just about all day Thursday, and then all day Friday into the, you know, end of Saturday morning. So we spent two really full days with them where they were, they delve deep into what this is really all about. This isn't just a left-leaning liberal, or, you know, it's redundant, but, you know, someone has far left views to, you know, that's pissing off people in Kentucky. It's more than a political thing. It's, you know, I'm touching a nerve because I'm criticizing their way of life. But then on, you know, on a national level, I'm, you know, a voice for people. I think, you know, that the progressive liberal, you know, I came up with that name, but, you know, the whole idea of bringing that part of myself into wrestling was because of my frustration with what I see as the hypocrisy of the conservative right.
Isn't that amazing? Because to me, it's extremely notable that there is an intellectual side here. See, I want to make sure people hear that from you, because I recognize right away that, look, let's be blunt here for a second. There are some people that are in the wrestling game that I've seen them. That are never going to go anywhere because they sure do have the physical characteristics necessary. They're able to be trained. They're tough enough. All of that, but they don't have the intellect to set themselves apart from the crowd. A lot of them, okay. And I'm not naming names. I'm just saying that, you know, that there is a faction within just about every wrestling organization that's ever been. That's kind of like the meathead faction, if you will. Okay. And not only are you making a statement which you personally identify with and agree with, but you've also intellectually figured out a way to handle it that required some sophistication here. Okay. So I'm trying to say that anybody who thinks, you know, this guy's a wrestler, so he's probably just, you know, dumb wrestler guy. I don't think so. I think that this is extremely brilliant. If you didn't come up with this, you probably would have come up with something else that would have spoken to the crowd anyway. So I'm wondering, what personas did you have before? Because this you must have had more than one, right? Or I don't know.
Well, I mean, it was always Daniel Richards, or Dan Richards, but with some, moniker in front of it. I mean, first I was the bodyguard, Big Dan Richards, just because the angle is in, but then I was Dynamite Dan Richards. It's just like, I mean, to borrow from Tom Pritchard's book of psychology, Dr. Tom Pritchard, who I had the pleasure of traveling the roads with on my earlier days in wrestling. What's so dynamite about Dynamite Dan Richards? That's a question you would have to ask yourself if you're giving yourself any kind of moniker. So that question is easily answered with, what makes the progressive liberal the progressive liberal? I felt like, as far as generating crowd reaction, I felt like I understood it was like as much as anything about your mannerisms and how you carried yourself that would dictate how the crowd would feel about you more than what you said. I thought that was on the live mic, I was a pretty decent interview after, after getting a few little, practicing on in front of a live crowd. But, I always went by a philosophy. I wanted to say anything I didn't believe. So that's why, when I see wrestling on TV sometimes and there's some hokey, convoluted storyline with all this stuff, I just, and people, get reading from a script that are given to, I don't like that as much.
We go. The more meathead type guys would definitely be, and again, not to insult you, but Dynamite, I mean, come on. There's been the Dynamite Kid. This guy's Dynamite. It's, I'm explosive. It's superficial. There's no character to it. But you start putting sentimentality behind it, and in building a character. This is not even, forget about wrestling for a second. You're building a character, whether it is something that legitimately relies on your sentiment or not. You have to consider all these things. So your mannerisms, and I watched some of this stuff with you, so I know that this is part of your thinking. Your mannerisms, you have exaggerated, or maybe, I don't know, maybe they are your mannerisms, but it looks to me like you're exaggerating certain mannerisms in order to really evoke that reaction. While people are suspending their disbelief, you're really trying to get them kind of pissed off at you. And it's not, again, it's not just what you say, although some of the things you have said are pretty interesting. A fascinating line I read was about building a wall, in fact, Dan.
that all started it. I worked for a guy named Randy Hicks, who was just, he wasn't a regular promoter, but he booked a show in a town called Sabine, West Virginia, which is a very small, unincorporated town and one of the poorest, it's in Wyoming County, which I don't know how they rank nationally, but, West Virginia as a whole is one of the poorest states in the country. So it's a little small town and, a fire department there. And, he just said, "Hey, I want you to just be the, most hated guy on the card tonight," or, something to that effect. And, I just took that as an opportunity to put this, what I conceptualized into practice. I didn't have customized gear. I had blue trunks, which work. I don't even know if I was wearing my trunks then. But anyways, things that I said the line about, I hope instead of building the wall here, they build a wall around this town so that you all can infiltrate population. And that got a lot of heat. And, I guess I said some other things about Donald Trump. The wall line, of course, is the one I remember. And, the Trump chant started right then, and that's why I knew I had something that would work. Because if it would get that kind of reaction from 30 people, what would it be like if I'm wrestling in front of 200 or 400 people? You know, and I later got to figure that out as I was, there's a promoter named Brian Reznor who was doing a week or a monthly show in just outside of Beckley, in a town called Glen Jean at the Armory in West Virginia. So every Sunday I was there, and you know, that's when I said, I told him I wanted to be announced as the progressive liberal Daniel Richards, and you know, just took off from there. You know, and it evolved, and you know, got the customized gear and everything like that. I'm not trying to jump ahead too much, but.
No, I love it because you know what, you definitely tapped into some of the people that you made mention of earlier. Very much the same type of thing happened with these Russian guys, who, by the way, not all of them are Russian. But anyway, another story for another day, right?
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. Yeah. But most of them were, but most of them actually were ethnically in some way Russian, but not, you know. Anyhow, but, you know, those guys, they would just come out and wave a flag, right? And that red flag, that red sickle and, you know, hammer would come out and, well, it wasn't a red sickle and hammer. It was a red flag with a sickle and hammer on it. Excuse me. They would come out and wave that. And it was gold, yes. And they would just, that's all they had to do. And then they started singing, you know, then they added to the bit later, we're going to sing the Russian national anthem before the match, you know, sitting there with the fur hat on and the whole bit. And this just used to get people just screaming USA, USA and chanting. Right. And so you realize you had tapped into something very much like that, except it's been a lot of years. It's been a lot of years, though. Right.
It's different now, though. It's different now, though, because I mean, the last thing WWE had with that was, you know, with Rusev and Lana, and Rusev's a Bulgarian that has Russian citizenship, and you know, Lana's a Russian who, you know, if you just do a Google search, is not Russian, and you know, went to Florida State and everything. It's like, so, you know, and then that rant's course, and, you know, it got some heat, and they put some good steam on him, and, you know, then they went in a different direction, it seems like. But you got to look at today. Think about today. Like, now, you know, our country is a melting pot, and it hasn't gotten any less so over the years. It's to the point now where even in not all small towns, but you know, there's people from, you know, different parts of the world that live in these small towns. So, you know, I think while it's a lot of times seems like we've devolved, you know, especially, you know, when our president was elected, you found that, well, that was a big thing. And, you know, and for it's historical for, you know, the first African-American president. We also learned how much prejudice we have. And then also, you know, with Hillary Clinton, I mean, I feel like sexism played a big part in this. And I'm sure some people saying what a snowflake I am for saying that. But I mean, really, the concept that we're.
Wait, you're breaking up just a touch, Dan, but we're almost at the end of the first hour, so I might have to call you back if you can't hear me. No, I don't think you're a snowflake for thinking that sexism might have played a role with Hillary Clinton, but, oh, man, I'm going to have to wait until I can get Dan back on the line because I want to address the Hillary Clinton thing with him because, no, man, no, it's not because she was a woman. I would have gladly, personally, in fact, here's the thing. You know, the lesser of two evils deal during 2016. I said the whole way through there is none. But I would have gladly voted for a black woman named Cynthia McKinney. Gladly. I would have actually registered and gone and voted if this woman was legitimately on the ballot and had a shot. I would have been more than happy to make that woman president before any of the stooges that they put forward on the GOP or Democratic side. And I do mean back when the GOP field was wild and wide, and there was Bernie Sanders allegedly on the left, supposedly, but he's too much of a socialist, so don't let him anywhere near anything. And besides that, a lot of people were starting to whisper, but he's also a Jew. Anyway, you know, so he's a Zionist. All of that nonsense, which is absolute garbage. Bernie Sanders, legitimately, I mean, I haven't seen him deviate, actually, from his positions. I don't know. Maybe I missed it. Look, I'm not saying I agree with the guy. I'm not saying that I agree with any of this nonsense, but I got to tell you, I'd rather at least deal with the devil I know. So anyway, Dan Richards, we're going to bring him back in the next hour via phone. Now, he is traveling. He's on his way to Tennessee at the moment, I think. Don't want to give his actual location just in case, because I want to talk to him about some of the very, very real sentiment that does get drummed up against these guys for the personas they play, whether they are real or not. Of course, Dan has his feelings and is kind of a progressive guy or a liberal guy. As he did say, progressive liberal is sort of redundant. But then again, I'm also going to try and pin him a bit. Pin him. Jokes. All right. I'm going to try and pin him with the idea that, guess what? There is no such thing as real liberals anymore because they can't seem to articulate a position, in my estimation, and see how he reacts to that as well. And we're going to do all of that in the next hour with Dan Richards. Hopefully, we'll be able to reconnect him via his cell phone. But until then, I got to tell you, this is kind of an interesting discussion. Not exactly typical, according to what other interviews you're going to find about him as they're emerging this week. We're getting him just ahead of the airing of the Vice News segment, obviously. He's been on some mainstream media, yes, indeed. But you know what? At the end of the day, he's an independent guy out there trying to make a living, and he's an entertainer, and therefore, I think, worthy of some support. I think that independent entertainers need to be supported a hell of a lot more than they are. Why are we giving money? Why are we giving our attention to a lot of these larger corporations who do not serve our best interests, when we could be actually dealing with artists? And whether you love him or hate him or think it's absolutely ridiculous, he is an artist to some people and probably a real-life comic book character to others. So, and then again, there's that other segment of the population. Wrestling is real. Don't forget that one. So I do want to get deeper also into how much hatred he's inspired among the Trumpets. But before I do that, hey, look, before we run out of time, in fact, how about this? I'd like to thank George and Melanie and Joe and all of those who had assisted and quite honestly made life a hell of a lot easier for me in the recent week. And you are the executive producers of tonight's show, just so you know. And oh, look, actually, he's calling back in. And we're going to add Dan into the discussion real quick if I can, because I'm going to run right out of time and the bumper's going to start to play. But Dan, you're back, right?
Yeah, here I am.
Excellent. Listen, you're right on time for the commercial break.
All right.
So what's going to happen is you're going to hear some music and stuff, and we'll be off the air in just a minute. And I want everybody to stay tuned because, as I promised, I'm going to get into some of this with Dan because, you know what, he's talking legitimate politics too, and why not approach that as well? I'll leave you with this thought. Here's the cliffhanger, Dan. Ready?
Okay.
I don't think that Hillary lost her loss had anything to do with her being a woman. Not at all. I'll tell you what the problem is that she was a bad candidate, brother. She just was a bad candidate. I couldn't find legitimate, zealous, I am so much for Hillary supporters before Trump, you know, allegedly took office. I couldn't find them.
That's kind of a cliffhanger. I don't think she was a bad candidate, but I think there were aspects of her campaign, fundamental aspects that were very flawed or just not there. I mean, proof's in the pudding, you know, she lost states that, you know, are normally pretty Democratic strongholds, and, you know, even though they are swing states. So, I mean,
But Dan, one thing just before the bumper kicks us off, let me just say this real quick. I leave you with this thought. Even a dog catcher knows that if you have grandchildren to present to the public and maybe show a little bit of warmth and humility with them, might be a good idea to present yourself as a grandmother, as a grandfather, as something like that, so you can relate to the people better. And she didn't even bother to do that. Anyway, we're going to continue the discussion with Dan Richards, the progressive liberal, the independent wrestler, who I'm very happy to have here on the Ocelli Effect. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thank you. WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. The brilliant author of The War State brings you exclusive reports about the big changes upcoming in the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Going to Chuck O'Jelly.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely, man to man. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
Second hour beginning, broadcast live from the facilities of Ocelli.com, but also heard on various other alternative networks. We do appreciate you, no matter how you're tuning into this or if you're catching it later as a podcast. Welcome all. Anyway, of course, that is the Eisenhower bumper that I like to play. It's part of his D-Day speech. And why do I play that? Well, I contend that we at least knew what direction Eisenhower was coming from. And he did regretfully tell us on his way out the door about the military-industrial complex. But anyway, enough of that. I have Dan Richards with me, the progressive liberal, and I hold that up in quotes. Of course, that is a bit reality and a bit stagecraft, but all of it rolled up into one. And I think he's an extremely intelligent and fascinating figure. Do hope that you are going to achieve a great deal more success and notoriety to the point where, who knows, maybe you won't even, as the fireworks pop off outside of my window, by the way. Hopefully. Can you hear that?
Yeah, man, I've been hearing them the last couple of nights. I've been on the road and was home for two nights, and yeah, they were they scared the hell out of my cats, I tell you that. Two cats. One's just scared of everything anyways, but the boy is gets petrified of them, just freezes and hides under the table.
Well, usually I've got dogs that are, losing their minds at this time. Thankfully, the little weenie dog doesn't seem to be affected yet, but we may hear her bark before the night's over, Dan. So,
okay.
Anyway, so in case you hear barking, it's not me, just so you know. Okay.
Gotcha. Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, I just wanted to, look, I'm the kind of guy who likes to give you a warning. You got to understand.
The transparency is what we need. That type of transparency is what we need in the White House.
Wouldn't that be a spectacular thing? What we have is we do have transparency, but what we're getting a good bird's eye view of, in my estimation, is somebody who is so narcissistic that they don't realize the level of damage they're actually doing. But hey, again, not a Trump fan either. You and I could commiserate about that. But before we went to break, I was talking to you about Hillary. And of course, part of your persona there, you go out there with a shirt made up of all these images of Hillary Clinton on your shirt. Okay, I'm going to say some things you may not like. As I said, when we went to break.
Unlike the people that, a lot of the Trump supporters, and I think, one thing I've had the pleasure of being able to state, in these interviews, because I've been given this platform, and I'm happy to say it's just the way I view things today is, in the last, I feel like 10 years, people have come to this place where it's like, you know what? I don't want to hear anything other than what already reinforces my own beliefs. I don't want to hear anything outside my comfort zone or outside my belief system. And, you know, if I do, I'm just going to get angry and shun it out. I mean, that last part of it's not so conscious, but it's just, I think that's a trickle-down effect for the lack of partisanship we have, you know, in Congress in Washington, and it just, you know, people see that, and now there's more and more, I guess, networks of networks, channels, publications out there that, you know, are catered to a specific audience. So I think that enables that train of thought as well. And so what you have today is people are just don't want to hear anything different than what they already believe. And that was part of the, I think, why the progressive liberal gets such a strong response, because God forbid you talk to people in coal country about other forms of energy and how they could get jobs on that, because you're attacking their way of life. And they feel attacked, and it plays upon, you know, what I think are inherent insecurities. But don't mean to go on such a diatribe, but yeah, I can handle someone else having a different opinion than me, and you know, we can talk about it, and you know, it's just I know the audience that sees me at these events is one that can't, and then you know, there's gonna be a time where I'm gonna wrestle in cities that are extremely liberal, and they're gonna eat me up because I state things that they believe. So you know, it can be one or the other.
No, and look, I absolutely agree with you, again, with the fireworks outside the window, but this is the fun part. Look, when you go after, you know, a character like this, it's really, I mean, it's it's fascinating because, okay, I let me just speak from my perspective real quick here, and we'll deal with it. See, because I'm even imagining at this point that if you got yourself a tag team partner, you could call him the Social Justice Warrior, and really set people off into a tizzy. But
I do have a tag team partner, Stan Lee, who's a 28-year veteran, wrestled for a number of years for WCW. You know, had a great career, and still has continued to have a great career. He, you know, he's very flamboyant, and touches a nerve there. And so, and you know, it they're complimentary, even though, you know, the audiences I deal with, particularly in Kentucky and, you know, any of these rural areas that I'm going to, they automatically, for some reason, they automatically associate being a liberal and, you know, then being a snowflake or whatever term they use as being a pansy and thus gay, which in their eyes is a very, very bad thing. Whereas I'm like, well, I don't really care who you have sex with. And I don't care if you're allowed to marry him. I don't see why not. That's all good with me. So, you know, Stan touches a nerve there. And I also play off of that too. You know, you're talking about flamboyancy.
Let me just say this real quickly. As far as I'm concerned, gay people have just as much of a right to a miserable divorce as I do. They should be, you know, just right across the board. It's not a problem. Yep. People are people, brother. And, you know, so long as they're not hurting other people, I've got no reason to talk to them about what it is they're doing. That's the way I see it.
I don't particularly find not from experience, but I just don't. The idea of gay sex does not sound very enticing or appealing to me. However, I don't think my opinions and beliefs should be law. And, you know, we have these freedom-touting Republicans who, you know, say they love freedom, but except for when it's something that they don't agree with, then freedom's off the table. And that's when, you know, they believe in states' rights, except for when things get passed like a law that allows marijuana or something like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, there should be a national law against that, as well as national amendment stating what defines marriage. And so again, that's the hypocrisy of the right. that I can't stand, and it's indisputable that it's hypocrisy. So
well, you know what? Let's discuss that. Let's discuss that for a minute, because I love this about you. I'll tell you that now you're speaking to my normalcy bias right here, because this is the thing that absolutely throws me into a state of nausea. Look, this guy, Trump, who is right now, you know, the figurehead, the leader for the Republican Party. Tell me what part of the GOP's platform in reality that this guy represents. Okay, these guys would normally be tearing people apart for spending time with nonsense instead of being presidential. Gee, it seems to me as though a guy named Obama went to a golf course a few times and got his head ripped off for it. This guy is there every weekend. Gee, it seems to me as though he's supposed to be morally correct. You know, you've got to just be with, you know, your wife and all that time and time again. How many wives is he on? I don't know. But anyway, back to it. Oh, third. Okay. Hey, listen. I don't count them. It's just
I know them, but I don't care. It's just, but it is relevant when, you know, the President Blackenstein happened to, you know, be a good family man with one marriage with two well-behaved daughters. That they found anything they could to, they did leave the kids alone. I give them credit for that. But for the most part, but you know, like. Michelle Obama wore a dress that had her shoulders exposed. Oh, no. But that was horrible and, you know, a national disgrace. But Melania Trump, who did nude modeling with other women, that doesn't bother me. But, you know, by the morals that the right say they're defined by, that should really bother them. But all of a sudden, when you put the magic R in front of, or behind someone's name or in front of their name, all of a sudden it's okay. It changes the rules. And they, you know, when you find someone on the right that actually supports something like gay marriage, it's because there's some sort of personal tie to it quite often. Dick Cheney's daughter is gay. So therefore, you know, that was part of his own personal beliefs is that it's okay. I mean, it's the hypocrisy. Maybe he would be fine with it anyway. I don't know. I kind of doubt it, but we never know that. The hypocrisy of the right is unending to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know what? When you don't get me started on Darth Cheney, please, because the guy's too much. I mean, this guy's been around since the Ford administration. Yeah, I said it. He's been around since the Ford administration, involving himself in things and building up. Oh, gee, you know, something called Halliburton. Interesting how he almost took that company to bankruptcy, but magically after 9/11, it started doing real well when he was vice president. Anyhow. You know, it's just par for the course.
Halliburton. I mean, what about that? Yeah, it's why is it? Imagine if President Obama had a business that received it during his presidency any type of extra profitability, even if it wasn't even tied to any of his actions as president. Could you imagine the fit thrown by the right? Halliburton is totally cool, and all of the president Trump's business ties, that they don't matter. Even though, I mean, I'm glad he's getting sued on that, and I hope he keeps his launch on in court on that stuff. But yeah, again, it's not a problem to the right when it's one of the guys, because it's just that magic R.
Well, right. You know, just like you can easily remove somebody for sex scandals if they're on the left, it's not a problem. But on the right, we have to be forgiving, you know. I mean, this is just interesting to me. And his behavior, you know, I remember Obama with a cup of coffee coming off of a helicopter one time. And they were talking about how disrespectful it was to our military servicemen. Meanwhile, you know, here's Trump doing his thing, and he goes to speak in front of veterans and say, you know, the fake news media and all of these people, they just don't want to report how successful I am. This is what he's talking to in front of veterans, right? No disrespect there.
When veterans should be know, shown the ultimate respect and gratitude. Yeah, it made it all about him. I mean, he did it during the commencement address. The only thing that surprises me now with this guy in office is the fact that people are surprised by his behavior, that the reaction his, you know, tweet got where he's, you know, punching a CNN logo in the face. It gets the reaction. It gets this, why are we surprised? I mean, I want the outrage to quietly continue, I guess I don't really care how quiet it is, but it's just, why are we surprised? What, you know, let's focus our efforts on the, again, I think we'll circle around to what you were wanting to talk about before. You know, discussions like this can take a life on its own, but the reason they did not have a message for the 2016 election other than, hey, we're not insane. And, you know, while that's very true and very good, you know, the right owns crazy, it's not enough. People were wanting to hear about jobs and, you know, you had one guy saying, I'm going to get you jobs. I'm going to bring jobs back in this industry, no matter how antiquated it is. But, you know, it's not that Hillary didn't talk about jobs. I mean, there are certainly other distractions there, the email thing, you know, above all else. But if people didn't know her plan, didn't know her stated intentions, that's a failure by the messenger, which is, you know, the Democratic Party and with her campaign. They have to own that.
Well, and they have to own the fact that, Dan, let's be honest here. Even right now, the left cannot articulate a position. They fight amongst themselves. You got to say this for the other side. They're not fighting amongst themselves very much. And even when they do fight.
Look at the health care. I would dispute that. I would have to refute that a little bit. You know, the health care thing is they can't agree on which shitty plan they want, which, you know, they're just. Sorry if you have to edit that. But, I mean, it's like, yeah, they're you know, that they're battling on that. Who can come up with the worst plan with the least amount of health care? You know, and that's the argument now. It went up to 9 senators that oppose it after it went through the House. I mean, I don't think there's as much division on the left, but a clear message to the American people and there needs to be a front runner candidate. I don't think, you know, the Republican campaign, when Trump was in it, they, for sure, you know, that was a front runner. He stayed the front runner, but I don't think we want to go the route of having, you know, 16 flavor of the month candidates. I don't think that would serve us well either. So,
Absolutely. But here's a key thing also, because you mentioned the CNN logo. I laugh my head off. And here's my position on the whole thing in a nutshell. And I want to hear your thoughts. The whole idea that that Trump is hated by the media is a complete falsehood. And I do mean in the realm of the same type of thing that goes on with wrestling. I really do, and here's why I say it. CNN relies 20 hours a day on him and his Twitter account for their programming. Let's be honest. What do? They see a tweet. They haul in some talking heads for free. They put them around a desk. No reason to pay travel expenses, correspondents, cameramen, nothing. They have it all in Studio One shot, number one. Number two, who's taking money right now for Trump's 2020 presidential campaign commercials on a daily basis? Your friends at CNN who are supposed to be his enemies, right? So they're relying on him for revenue. They're relying on him for content. And he's literally the driving force behind their rating surge over the past many months. So tell me again how this is supposed to be an enemy situation when at the end of the day, you're doing business with the guy who you're supposed to be in opposition to. I don't know how else to describe that, right? Even MSNBC, I noticed, was taking money from the WWE, like, you know, experience greatness with the WWE. I don't find that coincidental that there's merely that going on when Stephanie McMahon is the Small Business Administration person, when, you know, clearly Linda. Trump has that relationship. Look, what's that?
Linda McMahon's daughter. That's who you're talking about.
You're correct. You're correct. I mixed them up. Yeah, Linda McMahon. Correct. Thank you. I appreciate it, though. Thank you. No, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We're on the same page. Look, Bo James, who's a mentor of mine and, you know, a 28-year veteran, has wrestled all around this country, a published author as well, 3 books, got 2 more on the way. Bo says it quite eloquently. Could go into detail a lot better, but you know, his belief, and you know, you have, it's hard not to concur in a lot of instances, is if there's money involved and it's on television, it's a work. And I mean, yeah, they're all getting off it. I mean is there real animosity there? I would say probably so. Is it, you know, look, we didn't have a president the last term that was, you know, I don't think him and Fox were, you know, making money together. Not that I know of. Not that I could certainly point to something like you've pointed to.
Well, Fox News, that's a good point. Fox News was not running Obama commercials.
I'm not saying that as a compliment to Fox. I just think, you know, there's, if I'm to argue the theory that, you know, yeah, it's a complete work and they're all on the same team. No, I think there's mutual benefit there for sure. But, you know, are they coordinating this together? Like, you know, is there a creative team, like putting an angle together and, what, you know, writing what Trump's going to do next? No way. I think if you gave that guy a script, he would be the one way to make sure he doesn't do whatever you've written for him. That tends to be the way he goes. I mean, he's unpredictable, and thereby proxies are a ratings draw. And yeah, I mean,
that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing, though. Yeah, networks cover the president, but not ad nauseum like they're doing now. The thing is that
is a nauseum creator of nausea. I know it.
And it is the train wreck. But the thing is that you can't deny the idea. Okay, let's just say he's not even in on it, but he's convenient, because all you got to do is put the loose cannon in the right position and let him fire off in any direction he wants, because he'll keep people plenty distracted. If I'm somebody who's coming up with a sort of strategy to continue the corporate raiding and the kleptocracy, in my estimation, that occurs in this country, where, you know, people don't matter, but the corporations, which are also people in under a disgusting ruling from the Supreme Court, you know, that fact. Yeah. Right there, that shows me exactly why somebody would even want a guy like Trump in there. Hillary would have been quiet business as usual. Okay? Not a good distraction. The Republicans, even if there was 2 of them left on a rowboat, would have been after her. Okay? That's that would have been. Okay? But this is high drama continuous. And now every day, people like me have to go and check with CNN and MSNBC and these mainstream outlets and even BuzzFeed and everything else, a whole bunch of websites that I would not be so constantly checking on, to see what in the hell this maniac did next, because he just makes irrational statements, contradicts himself, you know. I mean, it's just embarrassing stuff. And I'm going, and I'm holding my head, because I'm going to have to comment on this.
Yeah, I mean, he lies. I mean, yeah, we touched on it before the break, too. It's like, you know, this is a guy that praised Democrat, you know, when a Democrat's in office, the economy is better. And then he's, you know, then during this campaign, it's, you know, everything's terrible. It's funny, like, when a Democrat president follows a Republican, the narrative from the right is always like, you know, if a Democrat enjoys any success whatsoever, that he's benefiting from the policies of the previous administration, the, you know, Republican administration. But You know, now we have Trump coming in, who said all the job figures and everything that were fake before. I mean, literally, Sean Spicer said, you know, quoting the president, because I guess he actually talked to him about that, is
maybe,
that, you know, they're real now. Yeah, they're real now. These job figures are real now. The stock market is, you know, sure, that was, you know, I'll be honest, I don't remember him saying those numbers were fake, but I'm sure he gave President Obama no credit for it. That would not surprise me, but yeah, you know, the stock market's at an all-time high. I mean, why is that argument not apply here, that he's benefiting from the policies of the Obama administration? Because when you look at it, you know, he hasn't passed any legislation. He got his guy in the Supreme Court, and that's been a big win for the Republicans, and why I thought this election was so pivotal. We had that, got that, he got that. But other than that, signing executive orders, which also used to be a big problem on the left, you know, when President Obama did it, it was awful, and he only did a few. Now you've got this guy who's in the 20s on this, and all of a sudden that's okay.
It was treason when Obama did. There were people running around on the internet doing presentations about how this was the most treasonous usurpation of power ever in United States history, that Obama is absolutely here to destroy the entire country. And, you know, and I kept telling people
un-American, all that stuff, which is just to me, was veiled racism, you know, and he's a terrorist and all that stuff just plays right into that. He ain't from here and all that stuff. And again, man, it's just like, let's just be objective. That's all, you know, all I would want is like, let's be consistent.
Well, about that point you made about him taking credit, here's the thing I never see done, which is the objective point of view. Truth is that the first little bit of time that Trump is in office, he's still riding on whatever was put into place before him. There is no time to change the trajectory of the system in the first 100 days, 6 months, whatever. You can't implement those changes that quickly. Even with the best of intentions, the worst of intentions, you can't do it. So whatever person goes into office is still dealing with the blowback, fallout, benefit, doesn't matter what comes of it, from his predecessor. Obama was still dealing with the Bush economy, okay, when he came in. Bush was still dealing with the Clinton economy when he came in. The foreign policy problems that were put into place years before these guys ever had, you know, a finger near the button of power, okay? They're dealing with their predecessors' mistakes and triumphs. And there's no reason to sit there and say, well, okay, this is where I take credit, but anything that's gone wrong, that's another wonderful thing. Anything that still doesn't look right, isn't going well, that's because of the failed Obama stuff. I love it. It's hysterical because you can't get any more disingenuous than that. And
it can't be both. You know, it can be both. You talked about how you can't possibly get your policies. It'd be hard enough to get them enacted, but to have them then fully take effect in your first, you know, 100, 150 days or wherever we're at now. I mean, the countdown's already on. It's just shows you what a lack of understanding he had. I mean, and just for him to say, I thought this was going to be easy. I mean, just how could you think that? You just have to be out of your mind. And he is. So I used kind of that as a part of an interview I did. I'm feuding with a guy named Kyle Maggart who does lean right. And I call him Kyle Fox News Maggart. Instead of Kyle Maggart, you know, because he does regurgitate a lot of what's said on Fox News. So I said to him, I said, Kyle, just like President Trump on Inauguration Day, you have no idea what you're getting into. But I mean, really, he didn't understand this job was going to be hard, or harder than what he does in his, you know, his world of business. I mean, how more unprepared could you be?
See, now, you know, I would go for the throat if I was you. If I got a hold of one of these mics one night, you know, when you can actually talk to the audience, sometimes they do the interview from the center of the ring or whatever. I would definitely probably say something like, you know what, I want to apologize for all my criticisms of Donald Trump, because apparently, just like Ronald Reagan, he must be suffering from Alzheimer's, and therefore, maybe he's not responsible for all the insane things he does. I would say something like that. They would probably run me out of town on a rail, though, because I just insulted Trump and Reagan in one sentence. But
well, you're giving the East like I'm sorry, you're giving the East Kentucky audience too much credit. And like the, you know, that the Coalfield area where I'm at, are a little too much credit. I mean, you know, people were asking, you know, what kind of source of some of my interviews and, you know, how I generate heat with an audience. And it's like, you can't go into specifics here. And I think Reagan would be a little too specific just about at this point, you know, because we're, you know, we're over 30 years removed from, well, you know, we're closer to 30 years removed from when he was president, almost 30 years. Yeah, let's see. He's done in 89, you know.
But
so,
You don't think he's iconic enough?
He's iconic to people in Washington and people who follow politics, for sure. But these are not those people. If they were, then I would rip Betsy DeVos to shreds in interviews. You know, or I would drop a line about her when it's relevant. I would talk more about Mitch McConnell being an obstructionist. I would bring up Michael Flynn, but you can't. But they all know who Trump is, and they all know he's the head of the snake. So I go after that and, you know, speak on to some, again, broad brushstroke talking points, and they can understand that. But you got to remember, at the end of the day, I'm a wrestler with a political, you know, politically based persona. Again, it's not a character, like I'm not being someone else. Again, that's part of what I do, it's intertwined. So, but yeah, I couldn't if I took a shot at Betsy DeVos in her interview and said, you know, you have about as good of an understanding to beat me as Betsy DeVos does on you know, the education system in America. I mean, it just would be over the audience's head. It's not to say they're stupid. It's just they're not that focused on that stuff as a whole. I'm sure there's people in there that do watch the news and do read up on stuff and, you know, maybe take in something other than Fox News.
It's funny. I've actually got a listener in Kentucky right now in my chat room who is saying, no, you really should probably pick on the Reagan thing, because they know who Reagan is. They love him here. And I know he's from Kentucky. So I don't know. But listen, I'm not here to tell you your business. I was just throwing something at you to see how you'd react to it. As I said before, obviously, you're extremely adept at figuring out how to do this. Otherwise you wouldn't be getting the attention you're getting. And I am convinced when I see you, it is a character, but it's not an imaginary character. How about that? What do you think? Is that a fair estimation of what you're doing?
I let everyone else kind of decide that, man. I have my opinion on it, but like, I mean, at the end of the day, what we do is art, and it's going to be interpreted differently by all the different eyes and minds that view it and take it in. So, you know, if they're entertained and they're talking about it, there's something to be said about that. That's the goal. You know, we are a form of entertainment. So, you know, and you know, it started, you know, I was accomplishing that goal for a local audience, and then, you know, thanks to the carryover from the Deadspin article that started this all. I mean, you know, I'm able to talk about it on a greater level and have a more captive audience that's, you know, interested in what I have to say, whether they love me or hate me. You know, I'm grateful to have the platform.
Well, you know, at the beginning, when you weren't on the line, I was telling the listeners how this is an art form, no matter what you think of it. And you may not appreciate the art form, but it is still an art form nonetheless. And and I find that that you're extremely entertaining. And also, it is great to see someone who is independent, who's not part of the massive corporate entity out there, you know, doing something that could indeed be thought-provoking on some level, that certainly is entertaining, at least in my estimation. Again, you judge for yourself, you the listener, not you, Dan, but you the listener judge for yourself, you know, how entertaining it is. But I do say that it does speak to exactly what you said earlier, which was, you know, wrestling and these types of artistic performances do shift with the zeitgeist, you know, the spirit of the time. And I think you've struck an interesting nerve. And I find it extremely fascinating. And I don't agree with the progressive liberal thing at all. I'm one of these guys who, you know, I will pick on people for they want their safe spaces and all that. But you don't strike me as the snowflake type. You don't strike me as the guy who's going to get upset at every single utterance of a slightly impolite word coming out of my mouth, you know, and become, you know, the PC police on me. You're not one of these guys. But you have, go ahead.
Just like all Republicans aren't, you know, racist, bigoted rednecks, you know, is there a faction of Democrats or liberals that are wishy-washy and, you know, get offended and by everything? Of course. I mean, you're gonna have extremes on both sides, but, you know, that snowflake thing, that it's just, to me, it's just another talking point from the right, you know. And you know, I'll let them be the party of name calling, and you know, I'll stick to core issues and specifics. You know, when there's an audience that can ingest that, that's fine by me. I mean, you know, that there's a reason that Republicans don't get into specifics so much, and their supporters, if you're getting into a political discussion or political argument, they don't go into specifics because that wouldn't serve them so well in the argument. So, I mean, there's smart guys in there that can't carry an argument with it. So I like talking to people because, again, I'm not a snowflake and I'm not wishy-washy. I don't need to go in safe space when someone says something that I don't agree with, or, you know, especially if it's thought-provoking.
No, exactly. And you know what? Sometimes to be offended is to be awakened from a state of, you know, a state of dazed. You know what I'm saying? And we see this a lot. And I got to be honest with you, that's why I like stand-up comedians, too, for the same reason. A lot of them make some very interesting social commentary. And I think what you're doing is pretty much a performance art piece that, you know, that effectively creates social commentary, but at the same time, extremely grueling and tough to do. And also, you got a lot of guts, man, because some people do take this stuff a little too seriously. Like you said, you know, you've been threatened and what have you, but, and like you said, your dad might worry about you or so on and so forth. But people that are public performers are often threatened for much less than the sentimentality that you're tapping into. You know, I've even had a gun turned on me, and I was a musician not making a political statement before, you know, simply because somebody found what I was doing to be anti-Christian in some way. And that was not actually what I was doing.
There's nothing more Christian than to kick your ass then. I mean, I think that's in the Bible.
Well, yeah, well, somewhere in there, you know, Jesus says you should shoot your enemies if they make you upset enough, I think. But
yeah, it's in the book of Frank or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Somewhere in the back.
See, you and I can have fun with both sides of this. But look, I really appreciate you taking all this time with me today, because I know you've been on a grueling schedule with the media, and it's really, really heartwarming to me that you would take the time to be on with an independent guy like me, because you have been featured in Sports Illustrated. You know, like I said, Vice News is gonna have a segment on you. You've been on a lot of mainstream TV, but you've also done podcasts with people. I see you very much as a level-headed thinker when it comes to what it is you're doing, looking to reach as many different people as you can with your art form. Primarily, but why not use it as a vehicle to make some of the points that you want to make? So, you know, how do you say multifaceted? Well, I can't spell it very well because I'm not good at that, Dan, but you definitely personify it. Now,
thank you.
Before I'm done here with you, because we are down to the last little bit of the show, you know, I wonder what it is that that you think people should take away from what it is you're doing. You know, how long do you think you'll, because obviously, listen, these personas in wrestling, sometimes they go a certain length, they transform into something else. You know, is this something that you see yourself doing in another 10, 15 years still, et cetera? I mean, do you have other things in mind? Anything you want to speak to, in fact, in this last little bit here, I would just turn the mic over to you.
Man, I 10 to 15 years, that's really hard to say. I mean, I do like to think ahead. I do like to think big picture. So, I mean, this has, what I'm doing has legs. How far that will take me, I don't know. I know in wrestling, no matter who you are, I mean, The Undertaker wrestled, in the national scene for 30 years, okay? Or almost 30 years. His career's, anyway, he was reinventing himself, but it's not like he wasn't the Undertaker at the same time. So, I've got new, here, everyone's seen the Hillary shirt now, everyone's seen the trunks and the knee pads of the Democrat donkeys. You know, I've got some other things on the way. I'm going to continue to keep it fresh. And we'll see where it goes. Again, did I think I'd be here talking to you today, or that I would talk to SI, or that anything that's happened the last week? No. I mean, I just, I've done local radio interviews, and I've done, I've had articles written about me before in local publications, but, to have this national spotlight, for just north of a week, I mean, I wouldn't have anticipated that. I'm a real estate investor as well. So, and that'll always be something what I do. I certainly hope what I'm doing now I can parlay into something, financially beneficial. I will be fully transparent about that. And, I see something in that. But at the end of the day, we'll see what happens.
Well, I certainly wish you a lot of luck. Now, I do know that there is some merchandise that's out there and a couple of places people could go to find out about what it is you're doing. I would like it if you gave people some reference points they could go to. I mean, I had to find, I found you on Twitter, which was kind of funny, because I was reading about you and I said, let's go to Twitter, see if I can connect with you. I tried to connect with you there and then I connected with you somewhere else, but it was really great. And I really appreciate you, just because you'd never heard of my show before or anything. I bet. And, I really appreciate you being, approachable, first of all, but also just being the genuine person you are. And I do appreciate your craft. I just want you to know that. But please tell
it.
Absolutely. Please tell people where it is they can find out about your next events. I know you have one coming up with the Fox News Maggot. I think it's the 13th of July. Right, and the loser has to wear 14th. Either the Trump or Hillary shirt. Oh, it's the 14th. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the 14th. Go ahead. Say a stipulation.
Yeah, the loser will have to wear either the Trump or Hillary shirt. See, obviously, if Dan loses, he has to wear a Trump shirt. And if the maggot loses, well, yeah, and I am using his taunt name. If he loses, he's going to have to wear a shirt adorned with all sorts of images of Hillary on it, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's the stipulation. So, yeah, super excited about that. That's on the 14th at our big Summer Bash event in Kentucky. Go to my Facebook page. That's /PL, like Progressive Liberal Daniel Richards. And then on Twitter, my handle is @ProgressLib, LIP 804. You can find me there. And yeah, I try to interact with everyone as best as I can. But you know, hey man, Mr. O'Shelley, I'm really appreciate this platform you gave me tonight, and really this has been one of the more thought-provoking discussions. And you know, I like that we've delved in politics, and yeah, we've agreed a lot. And I mean, but at the same time, I definitely appreciate the questions and everything like that. And even if we had not agreed, you know, it's definitely a thought-provoking interview, and I appreciate it. Well done.
Well, look, I try and do it a little different than everybody else, right? We got to touch on the business a little bit. We got to talk about, you know, where you came from. Who is this guy anyway? Because I'm just fascinated by what you're doing, and I figure the listeners will be too. And so I want them to get to know you a little bit outside of, you know, hey, look, how is it to step in the squared circle? And listen, you could get that from probably every other interview you do, right? And
about.
You know, so why not let's talk about what really goes into it? And, you know, are you actually afraid? I'm sure, like I said, Vice News asked that question, I'm sure. But you know, there's more to it here. And there's a lot more to it than what I've shown you. So I suggest if this interests you, if you're somebody who appreciates sports entertainment, okay, I think that's the moniker it's given at this point.
Pro wrestling to me, but yeah, it's you know, in WWE speak especially, it's referred to as sports entertainment.
I'm sorry, man. I grew up in the Northeast, so it was, you know, McMahon territory.
All right. Yeah, for sure.
Which, by the way, did you ever encounter? Because first of all, you mentioned the Undertaker, and just on a personal level, that was my favorite guy. Okay.
Sure.
But also another lesser known group of favorites I had were the guys from they called themselves Demolition, and I know those guys were independent wrestlers before they made it to the WWF at the time, which of course they were sued by the World Wildlife Foundation and had to give it up. Yeah. Anyway, just a note there. You don't have to comment, Dan.
I wrestled Bill Eadie. The first name. You know, we refer to as a guy, anyone who was on television, was a star on television, you know, in the independents, we, you know, is referred to as a name. So the first name I wrestled was Bill Eadie, who was Axe of Demolition, and was also wrestled as a mass superstar, you know, in different places around the world.
That's right.
So that was, and then I think the next name I wrestled was the Barbarian. So one of the first tag feuds I remember as a kid was Demolition versus the Powers of Pain, which the Barbarian was part of. So, I was in, you know, my early 20s when I wrestled both of these guys. I was like 24, I think, when I wrestled. It was my 24th birthday when I wrestled Bill Eadie, Demolition Axe. And then I wrestled Barbarian the following year. So, you know, I was like thinking to myself, I'm like, man, I encompassed my first tag feud I remember was made up the first two names I wrestled. And these were, you know, even Bill Eadie, when he, you know, he was, you know, older than he was, certainly when he was in WWE, these guys are strong as hell. Just the men among men, and, you know, what, just, the Barbarian, especially, he locked up with him. I mean, just feel the power in that man. Just undescribable unless you, you know.
Well, I used to love
these guys in the ring.
I used to love that. Matter of fact, I was thinking of that feud between the two of them. Axe Smash, and then they added a third guy, Crush, for a little while. Bill Eadie, that is his real name. I did not know you wrestled him, but he was one of my all-time favorites.
Yep. Yeah, I have that match on tape somewhere. But, you know, I was a scrawny guy in a singlet wearing pants, and, oh my gosh, that was, he was great. And that, I saw him some independent shows with him after that too. But, Bill's a great guy. And, I got to ride the road up and down the roads a little bit with Barbarian and, wrestle him a few times. I mean, just awesome. It's, when I work with guys like that, guys I watched on TV as a kid, it's rewarding to be able to call them peers. And, through those experiences and then leading up to everything that's gone the last week, I just say, man, what a life. What a life. I mean, the stories I can tell to my kids, if I ever have any. It's kind of hard when you're on the road to even have a relationship. But, man, what a life.
Yeah, I didn't even really delve into your personal life because I didn't know how far you wanted to go with that.
I'm an open book, man. It's all good. But yeah,
it's cool, though. I really do appreciate it. And I'll tell you, I would love to see that tape of you two going at it because he was something. I shook his hand once. Two guys who made a huge impression with me shaking their hands, okay, in Convention Hall in Asbury Park was first of all the guy that I knew of as Axe. I did not know his real name at the time. Right. And then, of course, Andre the Giant.
My God, I can't imagine shaking his hand, but I can speak to shaking Bill Eadie's hand. When you shook his hand, you were shaking hands with a man.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's an understatement. You can't state it enough, guys like that.
No. And meanwhile, I'm just some kid fan, whatever. And he's not gripping me hard, but you knew that there was just power in those paws, man. It you could feel it. And meanwhile, these were not the later on sculpted looking, guys that came. Bill did not look super sculpted. They looked like two bikers who came out with some masks and some war paint, and that was it. I loved
them. They're pretty thick dudes. I mean, they're very. I don't mean to disrespect either the him or Demolition Smash by calling them dudes, but they were built guys. I mean, they weren't as chiseled as you're saying, and they didn't have tans. But I mean, I think that's the beauty of wrestling is that And I think something that WWE has done a good job getting back to is incorporating all body types. That we're not all built like that. We're all not, chiseled out of granite. I mean, is there a place for that? Oh yeah, absolutely. And it adds to the spectacle. And you got someone with that type of look and can put in the right psychology, you really got something. But they were built. Back then, I mean, now both those guys are, in their later years, and it's got a lot of miles on their body, can't really do the same thing. But
no, but I bet you that there's still people that remember them if they can get to some of these signing things. Which, by the way, you doing any appearances like that coming up where you got signings or anything?
Well, you can see all my upcoming wrestling appearances. I mean, I'm not. I don't have anything that's just a signing or anything like that. I mean, I think that's a little beyond my name recognition right now. But I mean, I am still wrestling, and
you might want to get ready for it, Dan, because I'm telling you, you're gonna pick up some serious traction as the anti-hero sort of among some people. I guarantee you, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to want to get signatures and probably products from you and everything else. So hope you're ready, man.
I do have T-shirts available at whatamaneuver.net, and I have links to that on my social media, both pages where I've, linked to in the, staff updates or the tweets section in my Twitter on the top of my profile in the the About section, you can find a link there to my T-shirts I have available right now. I also have some 8x10. If you want to find 8x10, I do have some that, you know, we can just send me a message and, you know, I'll give you my PayPal address at $10. I'll send you an autographed picture and I'll mail anywhere to the United States for $10. So,
cool. All right.
Get with me that way.
There you go. And again, still an accessible guy. I'm not sure, you know, I'm not a good guy to figure out how far somebody's going to go in show business, because this is show business after all. But I think you're extremely intelligent and an interesting artist at what it is that you've done. One last thing I want to ask you though is, see, now here's where we get into a little bit of an odd area. You know, with all of what's gone on recently, right? And I mean, have you felt as though you've stepped beyond being the character sort of? I mean, are you gonna maybe look to evolve this whole thing into something else if it gains the kind of traction that it might? I mean, is this something that you see really evolving in the near future, or do you think at some point you might just decide to change things around if the response changes on you? I mean, how do you see that going?
I mean, I've got offers for different projects and things like that. Again, you know, I wouldn't have anticipated a week ago. You know, some things in development and some other talks, but nothing that's really, you know, nothing really to announce at this point. So, I think as HBO airs, and then as we will be, where CBS News will be with us, and by us, I mean myself and Bo James, and then the Appalachian Mountain Wrestling Promotion, they'll be following us on the road for like 3 days. The 11th, 12th, and 13th, you know, centered around our events. You know, and I've had some political commentators ask me to be on their show as well. So, and we'll be doing those following our time with CBS, or entertaining those again. But, you know, I think as that stuff gets out, that may open doors. But again, who's to say? You know, I've got bills, I've got debt like everyone else. I'd love to, you know, take care of that through this, and then be anything beyond icing on the cake. But yeah, if I can stretch this 15 minutes into 30, 45 an hour, that'd be outstanding and the job well done.
Well, it seems as though you got yourself well grounded when it comes to where you're going, and still think it's absolutely brilliant, man. And I do thank you. So once again, just like you said, you're available on Twitter, you're available on Facebook. People can find you if they're looking for you. You got that one big event coming up, and you are trying to constantly work because, hey, look, the hand is not broken at the moment. So, right?
Yeah. Hey, man, I wrestled with the broken hand too. So, I mean, that didn't do me any favors in getting better, but you know, I'm not trying to put over and say, oh, I'm tough, man. You know, it's not a business for the weak. So I've wrestled with all kinds of injuries, you know, and sometimes I don't get to decide how good my body looks or if, you know, if I'm able to lift at that point, I'm still going to make the town if I'm booked for the town. So I miss one event because the hand, but I mean, that's when it was so catastrophically swollen. I mean, you just wouldn't believe the sight of it. But you know, I broke my hand at the beginning of that match of this particular event, and then had another match that night, later that night. So, I mean, you just got to work through that stuff. And you know, but I'm a guy, kind of guy who admires like a Willis Reed, you know, for what he did. So I follow. I like to follow. That's heroic to me. So if I can embody that in any way, you know. Eager to do so.
Yeah, always look, you know what, the show must go on if you care about the show, and you definitely seem to care about not only the show, but some of the guts behind it, some of the material. And I say again, you say you're not a tough guy. I think you're a tough guy and a brave guy for doing what you're doing, man.
Much appreciated.
So we are just about out of time here on the Ocelli Effect, but Dan Richards, check him out. Daniel Richards, the progressive liberal, search him out. You're going to see him appear in a lot of other media venues coming up, but I doubt they'll go through all of the little back and forth that we did here. And I appreciate you taking these 2 hours with us while you're traveling, actually, to go do some other work. And, you know, again, man, really a unique thing, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, much respect, and thanks for having me on.
So the Ocelli Effect is done for a Monday night, folks, but we will be back again Tuesday night with J.P. Sotillia and Mike Swanson. That's right, I don't take the 4th of July off because I'm not about the holiday. Okay, anyway, maybe we'll have to discuss that tomorrow night. But Dan Richards, the progressive liberal, was my guest tonight, and I think we did something a little different here tonight, and I hope you did too. So stay tuned to the stream and stay tuned to the networks that are carrying us, because after all, I am Ocelli, you are the Effect, and let's make things happen. Have a good night, everybody.